Yeah, what's Universal Time? Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Jonathan Jones reporting. Police and immigrants' rights protesters clashed Thursday outside 26 Federal Plaza, New York City's immigration court, after word spread that Ravi Rugbeer, a well-known activist known to protect immigrant families from deportation, had been detained by immigration authorities inside the building. VOA correspondent Ramon Taylor reports.
Some supporters, who were already gathered outside the building for a scheduled prayer march and vigil against deportation, confronted a departing ambulance after word spread that Rugbeer had passed out and was being sent to a hospital. That resulted in multiple arrests, including two city councilmen. Rugbeer, an immigrant from Trinidad, has faced the threat of deportation since he was convicted of wire fraud 16 years ago. Following removal proceedings in 2006, he spent nearly 2 years in immigration detention before his release in February 2008. At the time this report was published, ICE had not responded to VOA's request for comment regarding Rugbeer's arrest. Ramon Taylor, VOA News, New York.
President Trump stunned lawmakers Thursday when he reportedly referred to Haiti and African nations with a word meaning dirty and impoverished. The comment came during a White House meeting on immigration. He said the United States should let in more people from places such as Norway. The White House neither confirmed nor denied if the president used crude language when talking about Haiti and Africa. You can find more on this story at voanews.com. President Trump also aimed new criticisms Thursday at the investigations of his 2016 campaign. He suggested that a U.S. intelligence authorization law known as FISA, the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act, was used to surveil and abuse his election. This is VOA News. Australia has accused China of funding what it calls useless infrastructure projects across the South Pacific. China has lodged a formal diplomatic protest over the accusation. From Sydney, correspondent Phil Mercer reports.
Stephen Howes, the director of the Development Policy Centre at the Australian National University, says Chinese aid in the region has had mixed results.
We actually did a study of the effectiveness of Chinese aid to the Pacific. We looked at four countries, Samoa, Cook Islands, Tonga and Vanuatu. And we actually found in two of those countries, Samoa and Cook Islands, the aid actually worked pretty well and delivered good outcomes. Whereas in the other two, Tonga and Vanuatu, it was less successful.
But Howes argues that the lack of effectiveness is also down to the quality of leadership in those two South Pacific island nations. China's foreign ministry said comments by Australia's international development minister were full of ignorance and prejudice. Beijing has lodged a formal diplomatic protest. The Sydney-based think tank, the Lowy Institute, has calculated that China has transferred nearly $2 billion to developing nations in the South Pacific over the past 12 years. Opposition MPs in Canberra say Australia's cuts to its overseas aid budget have allowed China to exert more influence in the region. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
President Trump will reportedly increase sanctions on Iran in the coming hours, while again stopping short of reimposing sanctions intended to push the Tehran regime to give up nuclear weapons research. The president was said to be meeting with his national security team on the Iran question into late Thursday. Rescuers off the northwestern coast of Venezuela are searching the Caribbean for survivors after a boat filled with Venezuelan migrants sank on its way to the island of Curaçao. Authorities discovered four bodies washed ashore on Curaçao, and they say 28 people are missing. Two men who were believed to have been on the boat managed to swim ashore and were arrested. Eight people are missing following mudslides in the state of California. Rescue workers and search dogs continuing to look for victims. The new figure was announced as authorities investigated more missing persons reports. The death toll remained at 17. Flash floods and mudslides triggered by heavy rains early Tuesday led to the deaths and demolished a number of homes north of Los Angeles, where wildfires last month stripped the hills of trees and vegetation. You can find more on these and other late-breaking and developing stories from around the world around the clock at voanews.com and on the VOA News mobile app. I'm Jonathan Jones reporting from the world headquarters of the Voice of America in Washington.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa. From the Voices of America, I'm James Mbatha in Washington. Today is Friday, January 12th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Nigeria's government has been given 48 hours to release or charge 10 Cameroon separatist leaders allegedly abducted last weekend.
Under the Nigerian law, once you are arrested, you are at liberty to know the offense against you. But to detain somebody for about 5 days running is totally unacceptable or intolerable.
Femi Falana is a Nigerian human rights lawyer. Gambian police suspend all political meetings and activities amid mounting political tensions. Angola's president sacks another member of former President Dos Santos' family. And Uganda's main opposition launches a campaign against age limit constitutional amendment bill.
We shall, among other things, be launching a National Assembly. And the National Assembly will especially include people's representatives from the 317 constituencies that were betrayed by their supposed representatives.
Dr. Chisa Besigye is a four-time presidential candidate for the Forum for Democratic Change. And Zimbabwe's new government says it is ready to grant citizenship to Rwandan refugees who do not want to return to their country. Those stories plus Samson O'Malley Sports and our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. The Nigerian government has been given 48 hours to release or charge 10 Cameroon separatist movement leaders abducted last weekend, allegedly by Nigerian security forces. Femi Falana, a Nigerian human rights lawyer, says the separatist leaders are being detained illegally in violation of Nigerian constitution. The Ambazonia secessionist movement is seeking independence from French-speaking Cameroon. Its spokesman told VOA on Monday that the movement leader, Siseku Ayok Tabe, and 9 members of his cabinet were abducted during a meeting in Abuja to discuss the welfare of Cameroon refugees in Nigeria. The Nigerian government has been tight-lipped about the alleged arrests. Foreign Minister Geoffrey Onyema has been quoted as saying he does not know whether it was an arrest or whether they had been called in for questioning. Lawyer Falana says he will sue the Nigerian government if the separatist leaders are not released in 48 hours.
Up to now, the Nigerian government has not reacted to the allegation that these gentlemen were abducted on Nigerian soil.
So are you saying that the Nigerian government has not been able to say anything about whether its security forces arrested these people?
Up to now, the Nigerian government has not been able to speak out on this matter. It's a very serious allegation that about 10 gentlemen were abducted in the capital city, Abuja. But up to now, the government hasn't reacted, hasn't spoken about it. And it's very, very embarrassing and worrisome.
The Nigerian Foreign Minister, Godfrey Onyema, said that he doesn't know whether to call this an arrest or it could be that these people were calling just for questioning or whatever he said. He said the investigation is continuing.
Under the Nigerian law, once you are arrested and you get to the police station or any detention center, you are at liberty to know the offense against you and then be able to contact your family members or relatives under the law. In fact, it's the responsibility of the security or the detaining authority to contact your family on your behalf so that they will know you while you are being detained. You're also entitled to a lawyer of your choice or a lawyer engaged by the government through the legal aid council for you. But to detain somebody for about 5 days running and to say that some questioning is going on is totally unacceptable or intolerable.
Now, Mr. Falana, have you been able to contact these people or have these people, the separatist leaders, have they been able to contact their families?
I've not been able to contact them. All efforts to contact them have proved abortive in that no government department has opened up or admitted that these gentlemen are with them.
Could it be that maybe they were arrested because the government think they are illegal immigrants?
No. There is none of them that is an illegal. They enter Nigeria legally. Some of them have been granted political asylum in Nigeria, while others have permanent resident status in Nigeria. And they are teaching lecturers in universities in Nigeria. So two of them are lawyers. So the question of illegality of their status does not arise.
you are saying that you are giving the Nigerian government some deadline to say the whereabouts of these people or to charge them. What do you intend to do in case that is not fulfilled?
If the government fails to accede to my request, I'm going to court to sue the government with a view to producing them in court.
It's so nice to talk with you. Thank you very much again.
Thank you very much.
Femi Falana is a Nigerian human rights lawyer representing 10 Cameroon separatist movement leaders allegedly abducted by Nigerian security. He was speaking with me from Abuja. Gambian police on Thursday suspended all political meetings and activities amid mounting political tensions. This followed political violence between supporters of the United Democratic Party, UDP, and the former ruling APRC under former dictator Yahya Jammeh. As Pandere Umbai reports, Police Superintendent David Kujabi says all licenses issued for political party rallies have been suspended.
The scene at Busumbala on Wednesday, where supporters of the United Democratic Party had an altercation with the supporters of the former ruling APRC party. Busumbala is situated in the southwest of Banjul, the capital city. It is about 17 kilometers away from Banjul. The APRC supporters were from a countrywide tour when the incident happened. Disgruntled party supporters could be heard chanting, "Burn the town," in the local Mandinka dialect. Police Superintendent David Kujabi is the spokesman of the Gambia Police Force.
So far, we are conducting the interview, the investigations, after which we will be able to conduct arrest. But I can also tell you that some senior members of the Gambia Police Force and some security service heads also have met with the community members of Busumbala to talk over the issue.
The incident escalated overnight as it spread around all the localities within the municipality. Party supporters were armed with cutlasses and other deadly weapons. Many people were injured during the confrontation, and there was also significant damage to property. Police spokesman David Kujabi again.
So far as I know, no one has been placed under custody because we are being cautious here. Just going around picking people and putting them under custody without good reason is not right. And this incident happened at night. So unless we investigate thoroughly and get the perpetrators, we won't be going around arresting people willy-nilly.
A similar incident occurred a few days ago at President Adama Barrow's home village of Mankamankunda. The APRC convoy came under attack when it reached the village. Some people were injured in that incident. The State House has apologized for what it calls the unfortunate incident. Given the current mounting political tensions in the country, the Gambian police have decided to suspend all political activities until further notice.
The Gambia Police, through the Inspector General of the Police, is suspending all political activity permits that have been issued. APRC, we are supposed to go on with their tour tomorrow, but that is going to be put on hold. And also, UDP, we are also granted a permit that is also going to be put on hold. And we have also received requests for permits by other political parties, but then we are suspending all until we get to the bottom of this current situation.
Busumbala is a UDP stronghold. This is the second incident in months that the UDP supporters and the APRC supporters had been engaged in such violence. For VOA Daybreak Africa, this is Pandere Mbai reporting.
You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Button, Washington. Today is Friday, the 12th day of January, and please send your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. Daybreak Africa time, 14 minutes past the hour. Uganda's main opposition has launched a campaign calling on citizens to boycott government activities. Retired Colonel Chisa Besigye, the four-time presidential candidate, and other members from leading political parties say by boycotting government activities and shunning parliamentarians who voted for the amendment, the government will have no option but to repeal the amended law. Mugumi Davis Rakarinch reports from Kampala.
The campaign launched by opposition leaders from different political parties in Uganda is dubbed Tubale Mese, which means let us fail them. Besigye says the opposition will come up with structures including a cabinet and an opposition parliament.
We shall, among other things, be launching a national assembly for our country. And the national assembly will especially include people's representatives from the 317 constituencies that were betrayed by their supposed representatives. We will now have real people's representatives.
The 317 MPs, mainly from the ruling party, the National Resistance Movement, or NRM, voted to amend the constitution, removing the age cap as a requirement for one stand for the presidency of Uganda. 197 MPs, mainly from the opposition, voted against it. Those opposed the amendment said it was meant to grant the incumbent president, Museveni, who will be 77 years in 2021, a chance to contest again. Besigye says the only way to punish those who voted for the amendment is by rejecting to work with them.
We will be seeking to isolate them in all spheres, political, that they are not able to go and have political engagement in their places. Two, to isolate them socially, if they come to burials, if they come to parties where I think they will be flukers anyway. Those who have businesses should be shunned.
Ken Ruchamus, the president of Conservative Party of Uganda, or CP, says what they are doing is provided for by the law.
The people offended predominantly are the people whose powers in the constitution are entrenched. If their powers, if Article 1 and 2 are entrenched, they are the supreme articles of the constitution. Therefore, the acts of Museveni over the Majesty Bill totally offended the people, and the people must rise and fight back in protection of the constitution.
But Ofwono Pondo, Uganda government spokesperson, says what the opposition intends to do is simply not possible to implement.
Tuvalimese is going to fail because, remember, as the bill was kind of returning to parliament for debate, they called on the public to close businesses, including in Kampala. Nobody closed their business. They said they were going to knock on the gates and the doors of supporters of the bill, MPs who supported the bill. They did not achieve that. They dared them to vote publicly and show which side they are. They did. Nothing has happened.
In the aftermath of the 2016 presidential elections, Kizza Besigye declared himself to have won the elections and announced himself a winner. The opposition leader later released a video which showed him in a mock swearing-in ceremony as the president of Uganda. Besigye and other opposition members were consequently arrested and charged with treason, although their case has never been mentioned in the courts of law. For VOA News, I am Mugume, Davis Rwakarinji in Kampala, Uganda.
Angolan President João Lourenço has sacked the son of former President José Eduardo dos Santos as the head of the country's $5 billion sovereign wealth fund. José Filomeno dos Santos was fired following an external inquiry into the fund's performance and governance. According to reports, leaked files from the offshore services firm known as Appleby show how the younger dos Santos appointed a firm belonging to his friend to manage the fund's capital. The friend then invested hundreds of millions of dollars in ventures in which the younger dos Santos held a personal interest. On the line from Luanda is veteran Angolan journalist Mario Paivai. Good morning, Mario.
Good morning, James. Thank you very much.
Oh, it's so nice to have you, Mario. What can you tell us now about the sacking of José Filomeno dos Santos?
In fact, a couple of days ago at the press conference of President João Lourenço, I also underlined that probably José Filomeno dos Santos could be sacked. This was maybe because of the increase of the criticism about some kind of the measures that the president has been made. So, but anyway, it wasn't a surprise. President João Lourenço also said that he have a report from the finance ministers after an investigation made for an independent, according to the cabinet, an independent agency, to the performance of the sovereign fund. The problem is José Filomeno dos Santos was sacked, but there was no any public evidence about the findings of this investigation. So the public and especially the opposition parties and civil society are demanding the government to be more transparent and to publicize what are the findings of these investigations of the sovereign fund.
What does the sacking of Filomeno have to do with the revelations made in the Paradise Papers? The revelations show that he was favoring or he made awards to his friends to manage the fund.
These are the allegations. So officially in Angola, there's nothing. That's why the opposition parties and civil society are demanding So the president and his cabinet to publicize the results of these investigations on the performance of the sovereign fund.
When he was picked to succeed President Dos Santos, people thought the new president, Lourenco, he will protect the former president. Are they surprised or are they happy with the way he's going after, almost going after the former president?
This is a very, very important question, because there are information that the president, João Lourenco, met with the former president, José Eduardo dos Santos, before the public announcement of the sacking of Filomeno dos Santos. So people are worrying because people are afraid that maybe some kind of arrangements under the table within the ruling party are going on. And people are also asking about the new board of managers of the sovereign fund, because some of the people which has been appointed are some kind of familiar relationship with the former president's family.
Mario, we hear President Lourenco has made new appointments. What can you tell us about that?
So the public space is concerned about the appointment of two former prime ministers, Mr. Lopo do Nascimento, which he was the secretary general of the MPLA ruling party, and also prime minister a long time ago in the time of the first president, Agostinho Neto, and also Mr. Marcolino Moco, which was also secretary general and prime minister. These kind of personalities are, in one way or another, close to President João Lourenco, are some kind of more liberal people vis-à-vis the so-called conservatism of former President dos Santos. But the problem is the opposition parties are saying that these kind of people are the old guard of the ruling party.
Mario, thank you very much again. So nice to talk with you. And have a good weekend.
Okay, thank you very much, James.
Mario Alpavai is a veteran Angolan journalist who is speaking with us from the capital, Luanda. Zimbabwe's new government has thrown a lifeline to more than 200 Rwandan refugees in Zimbabwe after the government announced that it was ready to grant citizenship to those who did not want to return to Rwanda. Sebastian Mofu reports from Harare.
Zimbabwe Social Welfare Minister Petronella Kagonye told reporters Thursday that the country is holding about 11,000 refugees, mainly from countries in the Horn of Africa, War-torn Democratic Republic of Congo, and Rwanda. Last August, some 200-plus Rwandan refugees cried when former President Robert Mugabe's government said it would send them back by December last year, after invoking the secession clause, as the Eastern African nation was now safe and peaceful, according to the United Nations. But Harare could not send them back to Rwanda, as President Mugabe's government was ousted by the military in November. Since then, Emmerson Mnangagwa is the new Zimbabwean leader. His social welfare minister has some news which might have made these Rwandan refugees cry again, but with tears of joy this time around, and they listened to her speak Thursday.
United Nations recommended to governments that Rwandese can no longer be refugees. So it's up to governments either to declare the secession or not to declare it. And as Zimbabwe, we are in the process of finalizing the legal processes of declaring that secession.
So we are currently profiling them to see those who would want to go back and those who have already been part of the community, so that we can naturalize them. They can become Zimbabweans, considering that some of them have been in this country for 17 years, maybe for 12 years, they become part of us.
Some of the Rwandan refugees in Zimbabwe told VOA last year that they had fled their country during its genocide in 1994 and they had no idea of where to return to if forced to leave Zimbabwe. Militants from the Hutu-majority tribe in Rwanda blamed minority Tutsis for the death of President Juvenal Habyarimana, an ethnic Hutu, sparking the slaughter, which claimed between 500,000 and a million lives, depending on who you are listening to. Sebastian Mofu, For VOA News, Harare. It's 25 minutes past the hour time now for Daybreak Africa Sports. And here is Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. Very good Friday morning to you, Samson.
Good Friday morning to you, James. We begin with the Total African Nations Championship Morocco 2018, which begins this weekend. Host Morocco and Mauritania will get the tournament started on Saturday in the opening match of the fifth edition of the Total African Nations Championship Morocco 2018. The final squad list of the 16 participating teams was released on Wednesday. Liverpool are in talks to sign Leicester City winger Riyad Mahrez, but the Algerian is holding out on a late move from Arsenal. The 26-year-old has been identified by Jurgen Klopp as a replacement for Philippe Coutinho. Mahrez handed in a transfer request last summer in a bid to force through a move to a top six club, but suitors were put off by Leicester City's £50 million valuation. Staying with football news, former Barcelona and Cameroon striker Samuel Eto'o believes that South Africa has the potential to become Africa's powerhouse in football, but only if they go back to the basics. South Africa, together with Cameroon, were booted out of the 2018 World Cup qualifiers, and the Cameroonian striker says it's just a matter of time.
Cameroon, the next time is going to have opportunity in 4 years, but now another team in Africa, like Morocco, Egypt, Nigeria, Tunisia, or Senegal, is have possibility to make this dream true.
And now to other sports news. Ghana is set to host the prestigious Hockey Africa Cup for Club Championship Tournament at the Theodosia Oko Hockey Stadium from Saturday, January 20th to the 28th. President of the Ghana Hockey Federation, Richard Akpokavie, is confident a Ghanaian club can win the championship for the first time.
There will be six male teams and six female teams. Every single year, we've held the African Cup for Club Champions, and this year happens to be the 30th edition. This will be the fourth time Ghana will be hosting this event.
And Kenya will host the FUSA International Karate Championship at the Kasarani Stadium from the 17th to the 24th of next month, and will bring together hundreds of players who will compete in four categories. This will be one of the series of events on the 2018 karate calendar. And finally, in cricket news, South African national cricket team, the Proteas opening batsman, Aiden Markram, insists there are opportunities for batsmen to make an impact despite the sporting conditions in the ongoing Freedom Series against India.
Generally, it's good for batting. A lot of our scores there. So I'd like to think it'll be good, but I'm sure we're going to prepare it fairly similar to last week, maybe not as extreme, but it's something along those lines.
And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a good weekend, and we look forward to your report again on Monday morning. And that's it for this Friday, January 12th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending this week with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as sports editor Samson Omale, along with our engineer Carl Sterling, I'm James Butt in Washington wishing you in Africa a very good weekend.
When news breaks, VOA Africa is there. VOA. On weekends, tune into Nightline Africa at 1600 and 1800 UTC. And our five-minute newscasts come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.
Are you suffering from heartache? No problem. We've got the cure for you. The African beat can soothe your heartache with its awesome tunes from the African continent. So join me, David Vandy, Mondays through Fridays at 0900 and 2000 Universal Time for a healing journey. I guarantee it.